Recyclical, making lithium ion last forever. Recyclical's patented recycling process achieves up to 100% recovery of battery metals from lithium ion batteries for electric vehicles, including cobalt, lithium, nickel, manganese, and aluminum. Recyclical Battery Materials Incorporated trades on the TSX Venture AMY, on the OTCQB AMYZF, and Frankfurt ID4. For more information, visit recyclico.com or phone us at 778-574-4444. Recyclico, making lithium ion last forever.
You're listening to HowStreet.com Radio, available online at talkdigitalnetwork.com. Welcome to HowStreet.com Radio, the online source for market opinions. Here is Jim Goddard.
My guest is Mark Leibovit, editor and publisher of the Leibovit VR Newsletters, also known as VRTrader.com. He's speaking to us from Arizona. Welcome back to the show, Mark.
Glad to be here. Thanks for having me.
Mark, do we have a special offer for listeners?
Yeah, for those who would like to sign up to one or more of my newsletters, go to VR Trader. That's Victor Robert, VRTrader.com. And we do offer a 50% discount for listeners of the show and for House Street, and the promo code you use when you go to the website is 2022 half off, just as it sounds, 2022 half off, and you get a 50% discount.
And are you a financial advisor?
Thank you for reminding me. I usually make that disclosure. I am not a financial advisor, nor do I provide financial advice. We do publish our newsletters and have for now coming up to 44 years.
What do you think is going to happen with interest rates when the Fed meets next?
Well, according to the, there's actually a tool that you can go to on the internet, and it's the CME, and they have a futures tool up there, and it actually shows you the percentage estimate regarding you know, future rate increases or decreases and so forth. So anyway, the tool shows like 86% probability that there's going to be a raise in September on the next meeting. So, you know, you can just go to the CME, their futures website, and they have this little forecasting tool there. We publish it in our newsletter occasionally. And, you know, as time goes out, it's showing less and less percentage of rate hikes, but well, you know, it's pretty clear. And then, and of course, you know, we've got Jackson Hole coming up in in about a week, out in Jackson Hole, Wyoming, one of my favorite places in the world, where Jay Powell is going to stand there. I remember the story from last year where he had a prepared speech at the Jackson Hole meeting around that time regarding federal funds and interest rates. And apparently, the story goes, he tore up the speech and just ad-libbed it, and the market sold off big because he just came out there and says, hey, you know, cut the BS, essentially, we're just going to raise rates, and the market didn't like that. So we'll see what happens if he's going to be more accommodating at this next meeting, not the meeting, but this presentation. I don't see why he would, because he's saying they're going to stick with it. The really sad part of the whole thing is that, you know, everybody's fault has fallen into this bull trap or bear trap regarding interest rates and what the Fed's going to do and not do. The truth is, raising the rates is not the key to slowing the economy. It's restricting credit, and I've talked about this for months and months, and we're starting to see some of it now, whether it's being inspired by the Fed itself or the bankers are doing it, but they're making a little more difficult to borrow money. And as that starts to happen, or if the Fed encourages it by pulling back the money supply, forget the interest rates, by just tightening up the money supply and encouraging the banks to tighten their credit standards or make it tougher to borrow funds, that's what really throws the country into recession or depression. Actually, raising rates is inflationary. And, you know, the higher cost of doing business, which is passed on to everybody, the higher cost of everything. So the raising rates doesn't solve the problem. It just, you know, maybe some people buy less if the prices go too high, but there are inflationary implications to that. So you know, if they really want to do the dirty stuff and really, you know, take down the economy, you know, they could pull in the credit and making it nearly impossible to borrow money. Particularly, it'd be difficult for the smaller companies, and that will throw us into a recession, if not worse. So we'll see if that accelerates. There's first signs of it now at some of the banks where they're tightening the standards a little bit, and we have to watch. And then the Fed doesn't tell us everything they do anyway. We've had numerous discussions about this, but, you know, by pulling in the money supply, and there's not really much talk about that. There's more talk about, hey, as you just asked me, rates going up. So that's not really the main issue. And, of course, you know, the Fed caused the problem to begin with by having zero rates for numerous years, and that creates an inflationary situation. And then you free money, essentially. And then, you know, you got the U.S. government and other governments sending out free money to people during COVID, throwing a lot of free money into the economy, and that certainly had a lot to do with it. So there's so many aspects to this whole thing, and I really don't know how it's all going to play out, because we have a lot of, you know, geopolitical and other issues around the world, you know, food shortages, fires in Maui, I mean, you know, things just come up that's more geocosmic, I guess, than geopolitical, that, you know, determine what's going to happen with the economies and interest rates and what the Fed will ultimately do. I mean, my personal feeling is things will probably get so bad, or some outlier event will hit, that the Fed will be forced to loosen things up and go the opposite way, both on the money supply and the interest rates at some point down the road here, whether it's 6 months from now or 2 years from now, I can't say. But, you know, I always compare them, as I did, to Alan Greenspan back in the 1980s, where this guy was as best compared to a New York taxi cab driver as anything else, because he would slam on the brakes, slow down the try to slow down the economy with Fed action, and then hit the pedal, and then hit the accelerator, and he went back and forth. And that's why I compare him to a New York taxi cab driver. And then, you know, I'm sure Powell will end up doing the same thing, because they were sitting, you know, sitting on the accelerator for years. Now they're hitting on the brakes, and when are they going to hit the accelerator again? So it's all manipulation. You know, it's market manipulation for centuries, for all markets around the world. You know, there's no exclusivity to the manipulation in the U.S. markets. We see that all the time. We just saw it with the other day, a couple of days ago, with Morgan Stanley coming out with a strong buy recommendation on NVIDIA, ticker symbol NVDA, which, as you know, has probably been the hottest stock in the U.S. stock market because of the AI connection and the chips that they produce. And they came out with some story, you know, the market's coming down, and they come out, oh, this is the greatest stock, and it's trading around low for like 400 a share, and we think it's going to go to 500, and the thing goes up 50 points in one day and gets everybody excited. And this is a form of manipulation too. You know, it's just, you know, a lot of talk, and, you know, gets people thinking and getting aggressive, and so that's just another form of it. So whether it's on the part of the government, or, you know, companies pulling in, whether the government inspired that, who knows, you know, what the connections may or may not be. But yeah, there's a lot to talk about here. But as far as the rates are concerned, they're going up, but that's only part of the story.
Well, Ed Steer, who's part of the Gold Antitrust Action Committee, has said for years the price of gold was manipulated. Two J.P. Morgan gold traders convicted of fraud to be sentenced next week, and yet the bank itself is not charged. Did these two guys just do it all by themselves without anybody at head office knowing?
You never know what the real truth is, but this is not a new story. Yeah. I mean, there's been litigation on silver traders, and pages of documents of charges against various firms, and J.P. Morgan seems to come up a lot if you go back and look at the research. But, you know that's been the opinion of GATA.org and the research that they've done for, it's got to be a couple decades now, about gold suppression and manipulation of the market. And that's one of the reasons gold and silver haven't done as well, because it was the intent of the government through their various secret programs, using the COMEX, the commodity exchange, and hitting bids on contracts for silver or gold they don't actually have to suppress prices. I mean, this goes on forever. I mean, you can read pages and pages and books on this stuff. And, you know, now you're seeing one little litigation come out, and it's the tip of the iceberg, and it's not new. I mean, I've been reading about this for 20 years. So, unfortunately, you know, whether it's hard to believe whoever's being charged here just decided on their own to manipulate the market on their own and make some money, because, of course, this does happen, has happened in all kinds of market stocks over the years, but there's been such a tie to the big banks and to the gold suppression scheme, which is well documented. I mean, this is not off the top of my head that, you know, it's international banks, the leasing of gold, you know, what's actually in Fort Knox and what's there and not there. You know, there's so much stuff in the futures market manipulations that go on. And then there was a period of time where the exchange discouraged or would not actually deliver gold if you asked for delivery of the contract, because in truth they didn't have it. So they try to settle for cash and encourage settlements in cash because of the actual, you know, shortages of the physical metal. This applies to both gold and silver. So there's so much to this story, Jim. You know, you know, you really, you have to dig deep into all the research about it. But yeah, it's part of the game, you know, and it's been going on for a long time. That's why I say you can't fall in love with any stock or any market, because they, you know, they all have their ups and downs and you have to trade them. And, you know, this is why I suppose, you know, a lot of people just buy treasury bills as they're doing now. They've had it. They're happy to get 5%, you know.
And if interest rates go up again, it'll be any, will it be higher?
Sure. I mean, there's no limit. I mean, look, let's go back to 1980. I mean, you know, with, you know, Volcker. I mean, he took rates to 20%. I mean, nobody thinks it could happen again, but, you know, it could happen again. Of course, like I say, it's not just the percentage rate that kills it. It's the shortage of capital that you could borrow. But he was involved in that process too at the time. So, you know, it's 5% now, and, you know, maybe, you know, things, you know, the economy is still booming along, so to speak. People are still buying. There's some signs, but the job market is still strong. You know, there's a lot of stuff going on out there that could get the Fed to go crazy again the way Volcker did. And in which case, I remember personally, I got to remember now, it might have been 14, 15% CD that I bought personally back in 1980. I think I bought one that far back, that high. I mean, it expired a couple of years later, didn't go on forever, but I got a huge interest rate on a bank CD, somewhere between 12 and 15%, and you know, I can't remember the exact number, but it was way up there. So, you know, history can repeat itself. So maybe it'll get a lot worse before it gets a lot better. I mean, it's really hard to say what the Fed's going to do in terms of the money supply, what are they going to do in terms of interest rates, what are they going to do along with the plunge protection team, which was an active portion of the U.S. Treasury and or the Fed that was enacted by Ronald Reagan back in 1988. So what are they going to do? And the question is, have to tie all that in with, you know, the future outcome of the markets here. So, and, you know, external events like this Maui fire and, you know, earthquake in Turkey not too many months ago. We have the hurricane season coming up now. And then, the press is not talking about it every minute, though they allude to it. You know, the Taiwan, China war. I mean, Putin says he was going to attack Ukraine, and he did it. And China and Xi is saying they're going to take Taiwan, and we seem to be not paying attention. It will happen, I'm sure, whether it happens in 3 months or 2 years. So a lot of stuff to be worried about there. And then, you know, I don't like mean to be rant and rave here. We have this BRICS meeting coming up August 22nd. And there's been speculation, it appears it won't happen, but there's this discussion about creating a alternate currency and backing it with gold. And some comments I read, apparently it says that they're not going to be aggressive in that area as many people had thought. So that's probably part and parcel to some of the reasons gold's been coming down here, because it hasn't been encouraged by the story that suddenly a new currency will be backed at gold and priced at some high level, which of course would support the price. So the BRIC nation meeting August 22nd or so is interesting to watch. Eventually it will happen, but I don't know if it's happening now based on the research that I've been reading. So a lot of stuff out there going on. I mean, it's wild, and the stock market's coming down. It's down about 5%. As of today, Thursday, and whether you want to call it a dip, a decline, a correction, a give back, a drawdown, a sell off, it's irrelevant. It's basically a reversion to the mean, so to speak. You know, we've had, according to history that I've read here, there's been about 239 sell offs of 5% or more since 1927. And the median magnitude of all the 5% sell-offs is 8.25%. And the average magnitude of all 5% sell-offs is 13.9%. So there's a median magnitude and an average magnitude that you have to look at. So we're at 5 now, so we can go to between 8 and 13% on this correction. And, you know, we've talked about this, and I'm not the only one, though. My forecast model did predict a late July high, when we published it late January. So there's no real surprise here that we're getting, a seasonal correction and pullback. And the question is, will there be other surprise or outlier news along the way? You know, we saw Fitch come in downgrading the, U.S. debt. And now there's some rumor out there that Fitch may actually downgrade the banking, in the banks in this country. You know, there's a report that they could pull out as well. So if they do that, that could be another little negative. If the banking sector is downgraded by Fitch, the rating industry, so it's a credit rating would be lowered for the banks if Fitch comes out. And again, this is just being rumored, but I had read that Fitch actually warned that they might do it. So that could accelerate a little bit of a correction as well. So. Hopefully I covered the high points there for you.
We'll have more with Mark Leibovit right after this.
Don't miss out. Stay informed. Receive the HowStreet.com weekly recap with thought-provoking podcasts, radio, and articles delivered to your inbox. Sign up for the HowStreet.com weekly recap on our homepage at HowStreet.com.
Welcome back. We're speaking with Mark Leibovit. Mark, countries that are in big financial trouble quite often turn to war to take their citizens' minds off their bad economy. We're hearing that young people in China have a 21% unemployment rate. 40% of their college grads are having trouble finding work. What an easier way than to divert people's attention in China than to invade Taiwan? Is there a big danger of that just to get people's minds off the bad real estate situation there? And jobs.
Yeah, I mean, that's the story of history. I mean, you know, World War II didn't happen for out of any accident. I mean, basically, Nazi Germany came out of a depression, you know, and after following World War I and the problems that Germany had, and they became aggressive, and, you know, they try to get the country going. They start attacking other countries, and war is a great way of stimulating business and activity and motivation for the citizens. So, I mean, that's one of a thousand examples we could probably pull out. And, World War II on our end with Japan, you know, there was a restriction on the crude oil trade, I believe, at the time. So the Pearl Harbor attack really was no great surprise there. It was motivated, you know, by, you know, a restriction on the crude oil imports or exports at the time. And you know, all kinds of cool stuff happens that, you know, triggers these events. So, to say that governments actually create war or instigate war is absolutely true. I mean, there are warmongers here in the U.S. who've been after Russia forever. You know, you can name all some of the top political leaders. You know, they're Russia this, Russia that, attacking them all at the time in all different ways. And, you know, how do you feel if you're Putin and you're being attacked all the time? You know, do you go out and ignore it, or do you attack Ukraine? I mean, you know, or there's a lot of stuff that triggers it. And You know, the Great Depression in the U.S., you know, one of the reasons we came out of the Great Depression was because of the war. So, you know, you can argue that the war was, you know, there was an incentive to encourage war, to get people to work and to get the economies going, and it's a sad tale, but there's a lot of truth to that. So, yes, I mean, China, they're having some economic problems. Some of their real estate projects have caused big financial issues in the country, and as you mentioned, the unemployment situation. Again, we're relying on statistics and numbers that we're just reading and hearing about. There's really no way of verifying all this stuff, but if it's true, that that could happen. So the answer is yes.
What's going on with the cryptos? Bitcoin had a real bad day.
Well, you know, everything has its corrections. You know, the stock market's down 5% and crypto's pulling back, and you know, a lot of this has to do with just the free flow of money. If money gets tighter and tighter, you know, speculative money is around for the crypto market. So no surprise to me. I mean, it's just a normal pullback on the charts. So I'm a long-term holder and buyer of the Bitcoin. It's in a correction. You know, we had a big, you know, rally here. You know, it more than doubled in value in the last 12 months, and now it's pulling back. And the others like XRP and Ethereum and so forth are also correcting. It's along with the stock market. So we're in a seasonal corrective phase. I just think it's, but regardless of that, I'm just a bull on the crypto anyway. And, you know, it's there for reasons. It's there because people want to avoid the banks and government interference. So we'll see if that all plays out as everybody hopes, because as we know, the government's trying to get into the digital currency right now, and apparently you'll be able to wake up on Tuesday morning and find out that, hey, by the way, you don't have cash in your account anymore. You've got a digital coin or currency that you have to use, and more than likely that's coming.
Well, in Europe, they have already a daily limit of cash you can take out of a bank. Do you see the same kind of restrictions happening here?
Well, there's been a war on cash here forever, because right, the government right now here in the U.S. is obligated to report any movement of cash. Now, whether the number is 5,000 or 10,000 or 2,000, you read different numbers. But, you know, any cash activity, they're obligated by law now, where in the past they didn't have to do this, report what they claim to be unusual cash activity. And the government's, you know, trying to suppress, you know, the use of cash, and they use the argument that, oh, you only have cash because you're doing something illegal. You know, well, maybe you don't trust the banks. I mean, back during the 2008-09 financial crisis, I ran in and withdrew a lot of cash. They probably reported me. I just pulled a lot of cash out. I thought the bank was going to go down at the time. Things were really bad, and I didn't want to take the chance. So, you know, anything could happen where you, you know, you may want to go do that. Maybe I should go in tomorrow and pull out all my cash and just get reported. The hell with them. It's my cash. You know? So, I mean, basically, people don't trust the banks. During the Great Depression, we know many banks failed and people lost a lot of money at the banks. I mean, you know, there is risk keeping your money in a bank, you know, and you don't have, if they call it FDIC insurance. I don't think every account is covered up to that magical 250,000 number they use here in the U.S. So they, theoretically, you could lose money that's in the bank, and there's a lot of reason for concern. So there's a lot of variables here. But anyway, the government has been out to destroy the cash market, and what you described in Europe certainly makes a lot of sense. Why? Because they want to control people, you know. Cash is freedom, and they don't like people to have freedom. They like to take away people's freedom. That seems to be, control seems to be the ultimate objective of a lot of bad people in high places. So until we get rid of these people, and that's not obviously going to happen so quickly, since they have a lot of followers and believers along those lines, until that changes, unfortunately, you've got to look over your shoulder.
Well, you're lucky to have $250,000 worth of insurance. In Canada, it's only 100,000 Canadian or 75 grand American.
Right, and that doesn't cover all the savings that people have that might be in the bank. So one alternative is here in the U.S. is U.S. Treasuries. I mean, if you believe the U.S. government's going to pay back its debt and not renege, if that happens, that's the end of commerce worldwide, I think. But so people, including Warren Buffett, who has a big chunk of his portfolio in U.S. treasuries, that's one way to go, because there is no limit there. You're just basically saying, well, the government pay you back, and the government always does, so there's no issue. You can put millions and millions into treasuries and be perfectly protected unless suddenly the government defaults on its treasuries, which would be a catastrophic event. That would be like the stock market crashing to zero. So I don't think that's happening in our lifetime. But though anything's possible, I don't think that's going to happen. So, yeah, you have to be wary of that banking insurance.
Mark, thank you so much for chatting with us.
Well, glad to be here. Talk to you next week.
My guest has been Mark Leibovit, editor and publisher of the Leibovit VR newsletters, also known as VRTrader.com. If you have any questions for Mark or for any of our guests, you can send them to info@HowStreet.com. Our YouTube channel is Talk Digital Network. Find us on Twitter @HowStreet. We're also on Facebook. I'm Jim Goddard. Thank you for listening.
Comments made on HowStreet.com radio are an expression of opinion only and should not be construed in any matter whatsoever as recommendations to buy or sell any financial instrument at any time. Available online at TalkDigitalNetwork.com. HowStreet.com radio is a production of HowStreet Media Incorporated.